So today we are going to do chapter 16, what is religion? And as we have mentioned before, religions are many and spirituality is one. So religions, you know, can be Muslim, Christian, Hindu, Jewish, Buddhist. As I had said even before, the essential truth of all religions is the same. They all lead us to the same goal and they all advise practicing values, doing the right thing, not hurting others, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And so that is one aspect of practicing values. But then religion also tells us about an almighty power, which they call God or Allah or Father in Heaven or Krishna or Buddha, but that almighty presence that has created this world, maintains it. It's because of the presence all of us are alive. It's because of that the plants grow, the animals move, the wind blows, the planets are all kept in their place. So in all religions, this almighty power is invoked, is worshipped, is recognized, and all of them function on the basis of gratitude, that I should be grateful to this Lord, the Creator, for whatever I have, and may I use these abilities that I have been given to serve the world and ultimately reach or know the one Lord. They all say God is one, but unfortunately, the problems arise when they say God is Jesus alone or Allah alone, and anybody who does not worship my God either should be killed or should be punished or should be converted or should be changed. So the problem is that in the practice of religion, we forget what the essential basis of religion is. What did Jesus tell us? That love thy neighbor as thyself. Not love thy Christian neighbor as thyself. Whoever thy neighbor may be, he may be Christian, he may be Muslim, he may be Buddhist, or he may not even believe in any God. He may be an atheist, but still you love them as yourself. So in this particular chapter, Swamiji has divided two aspects, religion and spirituality. Spirituality or philosophy, actually, he has talked about rituals and philosophy. And the both of them together constitute religion. So the rest of my talk will be more about religion and what is the difference between rituals and philosophy. So rituals are what we do when we go to a place of worship. A Christian would kneel down. A Muslim prays five times a day facing Mecca. A Hindu offers the fire, aarti, the flame. A Christian will light a candle. Buddhists also go and light candle and offer it to Buddha, the Supreme. So rituals can be at the body level. As I said, physically, what do I do when I go to the church or when I get up in the morning? How do I remember God or how do I offer God? That is only the one aspect that is we focus on. Religion is this, you know, this is the only thing. But they say that we are more than a body. We are a mind and an intellect. So with the body, I offer prayers. With the mind, I love God. And one has to have a relationship of love with God. God should not be somebody who I fear that there is this almighty power. He's waiting for me to make a mistake and punish me. But God loves me, and it is because of love that he or that, even to say he is wrong, because it is that. It's neither male nor female, but it is that infinite power, the consciousness. So I must develop a relationship of love with God. And there are various ways you can love God. You can love God as the Almighty Father or the Mother. You know, some people worship the Mother Goddess. You can love God as the Creator who has given me everything. You can love God as a friend. A lot of people have a relationship of friendship, that God is my friend. Some people love God as a beloved, like Mirabai in a Hindu culture, or like the nuns who say, I am married to Jesus. So you can love God as a beloved, or you can love God as a child, like people, a lot of people at Christmas time bring the baby Jesus and put it in the cradle or in the manger, and then love God as a child. And same way in Hindus also we have this relation. So a relationship of love has to be developed. And then at the intellectual level, at the level of thoughts, what we do is, so this body is external, mind and intellect is internal. So the worship should not only be external worship. People get so focused on just the externalities of religion that they forget the essence. So with the body, to do the external, with the mind, I love. And intellectually, I must understand what this God is, what is this power, who is it. So there are three aspects of learning that are mentioned in our scriptures. One is I should listen. All Shravana. So listen means when somebody is speaking, you can listen, or when you're reading the book, then you are listening to that author, because the author or the teacher is talking through us through the book, or you could be watching a video or an audio or Facebook where you can are listening to some talks by some great saint. So listening is not just passive listening, but active, where I become one with the speaker and I tune my mind with the speaker's mind, because the speaker is speaking from his or her knowledge, which he may have acquired from the book or from his or her own experience. So my ability to identify and become one with the speaker is very important. So listening should not be just passive, okay, it's just happening. But I should be actively involved in the process, and I should be absorbing the knowledge with full attention. As I said, it could be listening, it even could be reading, or could be watching a video or an audio while I'm driving or whatever, but I should have full attention. The second aspect is to reflect. So whatever I have heard, whatever I have read, whatever I have watched, I then close the book or close that video or just sit in my room quietly and reflect upon what I have just read or what I have just heard. Because if you read something and just fast read it like a novel, read a book, a religious book cannot be read rapidly like a novel or like a story. It has to be intimately digested. It has to be just as food you can eat, but then it has to be digested in your body. Your body has to absorb the nutrients. So religious teachings are not only to be heard, but they are meant to be digested. So you reflect upon it. Okay, this is what the teacher is saying. So how does this apply to my life? What is the meaning of that? What is the value? Is it any... And you, in your mind, you churn this knowledge. It's called churning, where you think about it and reflect upon it and see if it is useful, if it is meaningful, if it is helpful. And then the third aspect is to abide in this knowledge. So whatever I have heard, once I have decided that this is something that will benefit me in my life, then I abide in that knowledge, means constantly try to live that knowledge. Meditation comes in this abidance, because when I meditate, when I sit and meditate, I meditate on the truth, what the scriptures have revealed. I try to internalize that knowledge, and become one with that knowledge. So constant abidance in the truth is meditation. So meditation, of course, should be done for 20 minutes, half an hour, whatever, 45 minutes, whatever you can in the morning. It's very essential. But throughout the day, one has to remind oneself of this truth that God is with me, God is in me, and that God and I are not separate. And that has to come in all our activities. My activities have to become worship, have to become spiritual. So abidance in that knowledge, constant abidance, not just half an hour in the morning or just 1 hour when I go to church on Sunday, that is good. But religion should not end just 1 hour on Sunday or 20 minutes in the morning. But throughout the day, I have to live that knowledge. And ultimately, that knowledge should become part of my life, should become the fabric of my life, where my life becomes an expression of that. If you look at the lives of great saints, Jesus or Buddha or Shankaracharya or Mirabai, how their lives were an expression of the truth. You didn't have to, even if they didn't speak a word, even if there was nothing written, just by seeing the lives of these great saints, even if you don't read the books, you can see how they abide in that knowledge, how they live. Their life is an expression of that. And what is the goal of religion? The goal of religion So the goal of religion is oneness. Oneness, first of all, oneness with God, because God is in me and God is in everything. So everything is me. That understanding has to come, because God is in the chair, he's in the book, he's in the humans, birds, animals, plants, everywhere. So constant reminder that God is everywhere. So then there is a spontaneous love, not only for God that is in the temple or the church or God that is the creator, but God that is in every human. So continuous love for all is an expression. So if I am religious, I have to have love. If I become hateful or if I become fanatic, then that is not true religion. That is a corruption of religion or a misunderstanding of religion. Religion should actually, a truly spiritual person should become more loving. If it makes him violent, and we have seen that. We have seen that in the religious wars and in the crusades and in all the, then that is not true practice of religion. The biggest obstacle to knowing my true nature, who I am, is vasanas. Vasanas, as we know, are our tendencies, our habits, our desires. And generally, vasanas are considered as selfish desires. And how do these get fed? So they are fed through intake. Our senses are constantly taking in. So taking in, so when we think of taking, we think of eating. Yes, eating is one means. Yes, by overeating or not controlling my eating. But also things go through our eyes. We are eating through our eyes. We are eating through our ears, our nose. We are smelling, we are tasting, we are touching. So constant indulging in the sense organs, seeing too much, watching too much TV, or spending too much time on the internet, or just listening to nonsense things on the radio, eating too much of enjoyment, you know, whatever it may be. So that strengthens my vasanas. The more I indulge, the more my vasana gets strengthened, the further I go from the truth. So they say live a life of intelligent self-control. So when they say control, they think of the other, I won't do anything, I won't do this. Not like that. You cannot stop eating, you cannot stop living, you cannot stop. So, but intelligently self-control. And sublimation is, one is suppression, where you suppress and forcefully I have this strong desire to do it and I won't do it. And all you're doing is like you're squeezing a ball. You push, 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 and after a while it comes out. There's only so much you can push it. So similarly, a desire can only be suppressed to a certain extent, and then the mind just breaks and into the enjoyment. So sublimate. So turn the attention of whatever desire I am upwards. Then why am I controlling my diet? So I have more time to meditate. Why am I not spending time on the internet or on the computer? Why am I not wasting my time on the telephone gossiping? So I may have more time to study, more time to... So slowly turn the direction of your desires towards God. And what will happen is that lower desires will fall off by themselves. As my mind goes towards the Lord, objects, emotions, thoughts, the lower world falls off by itself. Like a girl, she loves her little doll and carries it everywhere. And even when it's missing one eye and it's torn, she doesn't want to part with it. And anybody tries to take it, she fights. But then when she turns 16 and gets her car, and then now she has a boyfriend, then where is the doll? The doll dropped off. Why? Because she got something better. In this case, I'm not sure if it's better or worse, but still on dolls, yes. But the point is that they got something what they considered better. So give the mind something superior so that the inferior falls off by itself. And constant remembrance, constantly remembering my goal in life and never forgetting is very, very important. That's why repeated listening reminds you again and again. Talking about remembering, there was this older couple and they invited another older couple to their house for dinner. And so after dinner, the two women were sitting in the kitchen and talking, and the two men were in the study, you know, talking politics and smoking a cigar. And one man tells another, you know, yesterday we went to a very nice restaurant. So the second one says, what was the name of the restaurant? He says, name? I don't remember the name. You know that flower, the red one, which has thorns and which you give to your beloved? He says, rose. He says, yeah. Calls out to the kitchen, Rose, what was the name of the restaurant we went to? So constantly remembering and never forgetting what is my goal, what is my purpose. Because why am I on earth? To reach God, to realize the truth. That is my purpose. And then people say, what is the harm in having some fun? You know, we are here, only one life. And if we don't, especially if we don't believe in multiple life, this is the only life I have. And what's wrong in having fun and having a few drinks and some parties and going out with friends? And I'm not a monk. It's okay. You know, we're not saying that you should completely suppress your desires, but you should remember that whatever desires are strong and you indulge in, all they will do is delay. If your goal is spiritual progress, it will delay. We're not saying don't do that, or this is bad for you, or this is harmful. If you think it's okay, but the more time I spend in the world, the further away I get from the truth. So it will just delay your progress. And if you are okay with it, it's all right. But especially if you believe this is the only life I have, then there should be no room for delay. And even if you believe in multiple lives, as a Hindu, I don't know. This time I'm born as a human. Next life, I may be born as a mosquito or a bug or a cockroach. Or how do I know? Dog, monkey. So either way, it should not delay. But there should be a sense of urgency that before I end my life, this particular life, however years I have, whether it's 70, 80, 90, whatever, I must know God, I must realize. So all of us should develop that urgency, that our time is very limited. I don't know when this world, it's like, this Ferris wheel goes up and down, up and down. Ultimately, the Ferris wheel stops and you have to get off. So this world is like a Ferris wheel, up and down, up and down. It takes me up and down. And when it's time for me to check out, when my ticket is finished, we don't know. So have a sense of urgency, and work should be service. Through my work, I should serve God, and I should constantly help others as an expression of my gratitude. So wake up in the morning and thank God for a beautiful day. Thank God for whatever I have been given. And then may I utilize this day in serving you. So resolve that. And at the end of the day, thank you, God, for giving me this day. And reflect back and see, have I done anything in this day to make myself better and make this world a better place? If I have, yes, then my day was fruitful. If I have not done anything for self-improvement or for helping others, then I have wasted these very precious 24 hours, because each day is passing one by one, one by one, one by one. And time is so precious, will not come back. So time should not be wasted. Time is more valuable than money, because money you can earn back even if you have lost it in the stock market or whatever. But time, once it is gone, can you go back to becoming 16? No. Nothing. You cannot get a moment back. And as somebody who can't breathe, who has, you know, difficulty, asthma, how precious this breath is. So every moment, every breath, remember, is very precious. Then when desires arise, what should we do with desires? We all have desires. You know, I want this, I want. So there are three ways. One is indulge. Just go on doing it. And we already realize that indulging in desires takes us in the wrong path. The second is be a witness. And that is the best. At this moment, I have a desire for ice cream, say. But I am diabetic and ice cream is not good for me. Or whatever the desire is. I have a desire for this enjoyment or that enjoyment. If I know that this is not good for me, or this particular desire is taking me away from my goal, first you become a witness and watch it. Yes, this desire is arising, but it is not me, because I am the consciousness. The desire belongs to the body for objects, mind for emotions, or to the intellect for thoughts. So be a witness of this desire and say the desire belongs to the body, it belongs to the mind. The mind wants the company of so-and-so, or the body wants this. But be a witness and watch it. And the more you become a witness, slowly the desire dies down and you reach a state of desirelessness, where this person then has no selfish desires. All their desires are for betterment of themselves. So start with indulging, then become a witness. Watch the desire, and ultimately the desire will die down. And the company of good people is very, very essential. So good people can be in a group like this where we meet to discuss, or company can be of good books, you know, reading good books, watching good videos on YouTube, listening to, you know, speakers that come, you know, periodically. We have very good teachers who come here. And there may be others, you know, in your church or in the wherever, you know, listening to good sermons or good speakers. That's the Center for Spiritual Learning. I have, you know, myself spoken there. They have some very good teachers. So the company of good people is very essential. And how do I deal with the world? They say like a mirror. Like when I see myself in the mirror, or somebody standing next to me and that I see that person in the mirror, can I hold on to that image in the mirror and love it and hug it and kiss it? No. Or I see myself in the mirror and I say, and early in the morning I'm ready, I've done all my makeup, I'm all dressed and everything. And then I, at the end of the day, I'm tired and exhausted. Can I capture that one who was there in the morning and hold on to it? No, because that whoever was there was just a reflection of who I really am. So holding, trying to hold on to this world is like trying to hold on to the image in the mirror. This world is a reflection of that consciousness, the Lord. The Lord is everywhere, but we do not see because it is unmanifest, it is hidden. But this world is a reflection of that. So see the world as a reflection of God, just as I see the mirror, my reflection. But do not hold on to the reflection. You cannot hold on to the reflection. So do not try to hold on to the world as something that will give me permanent joy. But realize that the world is a temporary expression. And so there are two aspects to truth, to meditation. One is knowing that I am that infinite reality. And second is that this world is an expression, is a mirror expression of that reality, is not going to give me true joy, permanent joy. So negating the world, negating does not mean that the world does not exist, but the world, what I see, is not what it really is. It is actually the Lord appearing in all these forms, but I am not able to see God. So do not hold on to that world to give you joy, just as we do not hold on to the mirror image. You can't. So that is, in brief, the difference between religion and spirituality, and between rituals and philosophy. Rituals are the practice of religion, and philosophy is the teaching, is the knowledge which the Prophet has given us, and they are both necessary. When you go home, please read this book. I did not cover what has been covered in the book because I thought it would be repetitious. But there he talks about religion is the practice and philosophy is the teaching. And I spend most of the time talking about the teaching and how it applies to us. So any questions, any comments? I think that's a good question. As I said, whatever I have is gift. I did not create it myself. I did not create my body, my mind, my intellect. You say my parents created it. The parents created it, but the ability to create came from a higher power. So whatever I have at this moment is a gift from God. So just as somebody gives you a gift, you thank them on your birthday or whatever. So that's what they say, that whatever I have is God's gift to me. What I do with the gift is my gift to God. So what I do with my abilities, so that is number one, that God has given me all the abilities. And I mean, love is the most powerful force. If I love something, only then I will go towards it. Unless I love basketball, I won't become a great basketball player. Unless I love business, I won't be successful in business. So I have to start loving God with full force, as Jesus has said. And by constant remembrance, of just as a basketball player constantly practices, constantly plays, constantly shooting. So similarly, constantly remembering God with an attitude of gratitude. And that's what I said, get up in the morning. And the first thing, there is a gentleman who used to come to the meditation class. He moved to the coast, George Johnson. And he starts his meditation every morning with an attitude of gratitude. First of all, he'll be thankful to God for what simple things like his body, his wife, his children, his family, and then more and more things to be grateful for. And without love, you cannot progress in any field. So one has to, if I want to progress in spirituality, I have to fall in love with spirituality. I have to fall in love with God. It's not easy, but it is essential. And yeah, people is, actually it's easier to love God. It's more difficult to love people. It's more difficult, especially your family members. That's when most of the problem comes. My spouse or my teenage child or my boss or my coworker or my neighbor. So if you see God in everybody and treat them like you would want to be treated, then slowly you develop positive feelings. And then reading the lives of saints, how they loved God and devoted their whole life.
I think being grateful is not really the first thing. It's not really a common thing in human nature.
Right.
You know?
I think because emotions have to be accompanied by intellect, by not only loving God, but by knowing God. Once you know what is, so your mind and intellect both have to be. Love, we only consider it as an emotional love, but intellectually knowing and understanding God and seeing God's presence at all times, then you develop not only an emotional love, but an intellectual connection. So the mind and intellect both have to be involved. They're like two wings of a bird.
I kind of feel rather than being hung up on whether you think you feel the emotion of love for God.
Yes. Obeying again is an intellectual activity. Obeying is an intellectual activity and a physical. So emotional is mind, obeying is understanding and then applying at the body level.
Feelings go all over the place. But that's just one thing that...
Yes.
Because most of the time we call it love, but it's really attachment.
Yeah, attachment is dependence. That I depend for my happiness on
and
this.
And it's very difficult, like I said, we are so cultured about that.
Right.
Even, so.
So attachments are not the kind of happiness we should prefer.
And true love is also unconditional. If I love somebody for what I can get, then it becomes conditional love, as long as that person is giving me that. And same thing, when I love God for what I can get, oh God, give me a house, oh God, give my son, let him go to a better college, oh God, give me this, oh God, give me that, then we are loving God for something else. So then that something else becomes more important than God. I'm loving God only as long as he keeps giving me. I have this shopping list. God, I want this, 10 things. And out of 10, if I got 9 and didn't get the 10th one, what happened to this one? So if I love God, then I love him unconditionally, regardless of whether I get what I want or don't get what I want. Because then I don't love God for something else, but I love God unconditionally. The same thing in worldly relationships. If you love somebody for something, then when that something goes away, then your love will fade. But if you love that person unconditionally, then... So you're right.
So at one point in my life, I found that I was a total phony and that I could not love anybody. I did not love anyone. I did not love God. So I asked God to help me.
Mm-hmm.
He can place what he wants. He doesn't give me a lot of love to work with, but when he wants, he can give me enough love to obey and accomplish what I need to accomplish.
Right. Love of God is in every breath. Every breath you have is a gift from God.
Yeah.
The fact that you're breathing and
maybe
talking
I'm going
about
feeling, God. I feel like
right.